We are the leaders of tomorrow. We need to engage each other in thoughtful conversation and build a more empathetic understanding of the complex world in which we live. I'm your host, Akash, and you're listening to A Point of View. Change is inevitable. As we grow older, we are forced away from the comfort of the status quo, the familiar, the cozy. Today's episode will explore these transition points, how we can go from evading change to embracing change. Our guest today is the incomparable Montana Chong. She's a fourth-year anatomy and cell biology student at McGill University and the VP Communications of the Recreational Dance Company, along with the VP Social Media of Allegria Contemporary Ballet Company in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Welcome to the show today, Montana.
Thank you, Akash. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Today's episode is all about transition points in life, some of which are gradual and occur over years or decades, others of which are discrete, occurring quickly and unexpectedly. What is the first transition point in your life that you look back on and you find very impactful in your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, Akash. Well, my biggest transition to date was definitely the transition from high school to university. I moved away from my hometown to Montreal. I only had one friend there from high school, and it was very difficult being away from family. I was big into dance beforehand. I'd been doing ballet ever since I was 5 years old, and it became like half of my identity other than school. Like, those two things together were basically my whole day for most of my life. Like, I'd go to school from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. and then I went straight to dance with maybe a half an hour break to eat, and then I'd get home at like 9 p.m. and then start my schoolwork because I wanted to be a doctor so badly ever since I could remember, basically. So that was basically my whole life. And then when I came here, I mean, the university life is very different. You don't have class for the entire day. Most of your day is on your time, like whatever you make of it, right? So I definitely struggled. I felt like I had lost half of my identity when I could no longer dance in what I thought was a meaningful way. Like, I no longer performed at a high level, and I just felt super lost. And with school, the change in academics was such a shift. I went from being basically like one of the top in my class to just average, or like I felt below average. Like, I failed my first exam in the first semester, and I used to think I was smart, but then I just felt like I wasn't anymore. Like, nothing made me special anymore. So that was super difficult for me. And I know a lot of people feel the same way with the sports and activities that they did in high school. It's just, you lose some of that moving away. Like, you don't have the same support system you once had, and you have to figure out things on your own.
Part of the difficulty of that transition is the expectations that are tied to, whether self-imposed or put on by others, that transition and that next phase of your life. When you were in high school, first, what made you choose that combination of being the dancer doctor? Why did you choose those two things as sort of the things you would follow as your passions, your primary motivators in life?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Well, for being a doctor, I honestly don't know what it is to this day even. I suspect that, well, definitely one of my biggest personality traits that I've found out now is that I'm a very empathetic and compassionate person. I love helping people, as cheesy as it sounds. Like, I remember my mom being sick when I was like super little. She was like lying on the couch, and then I was like, oh no, what can I do to make her feel better? So I went to the kitchen, toasted some toast and butter, because she would always make it for me when I felt sick, and then I chop it up into little cubes, and then I brought it to her, and she was so happy I did that. And like, I guess ever since then, I always love doing things for other people, almost to a fault, honestly. And maybe we could talk about that later, but putting other people before myself. But I just love doing that, and that's something that makes me really happy. So I've always wanted to do something with my life that would help people. And then with dance, I was quite forced into it, honestly, when I was 5. I did soccer, gymnastics, figure skating as well. And then eventually I found out that I loved performing ballet in front of people, and I was good at it.
Now, to say you were good at it is an extreme understatement. You performed at, some would say, the highest level, and you were leading a lot of these ballets throughout the years, going from somebody who didn't want to do ballet to somebody who was starring in lead ballets. What was that transition like? What was that process like for you? Was it something that you began to enjoy, presumably because you continued to do it over many years?
I remember I was like a nobody, and then my artistic director walked in on me like with my leg up behind my head. Like, I was always a very flexible child, weirdly. Ever since I was 2, my mom said she once found me in front of the fridge in the splits for no reason. I was just trying to get food and I was in the splits. So I've always been flexible, so that caught my director's eye. And honestly, I used to be very nervous about doing things in front of people, but I think it was exposure. And I take this advice with me currently. Like, exposure is so important if you want to get better at something and find a passion, a calling.
And on the point of exposure, a lot of people are forced to do something that they don't particularly enjoy, and they don't learn to love it. They don't begin enjoying it, and they're forced to stick that path. You mentioned becoming a doctor. I think for a lot of doctors out there, perhaps the medical profession isn't something they wanted to go into, and maybe they don't even enjoy it still. You see that it might be a similar case with dentistry, where the suicide rate of any profession is the highest. Part of that might come from the fact that a lot of people are perhaps forced into high-paying, seemingly prestigious professions that they might not actually enjoy and might not get a sense of fulfillment out of. Your transition into ballet and into enjoying that craft was not similar to that transition of going to university and seeing that transition from high school. What do you think made those two experiences different in handling the transition in your mind?
Well, the major difference, I think, was having the support of my family and friends. My mom was always very supportive of me when I was dancing, when I was gaining more recognition. And she was always like, come on, Montana, you're so strong, you can do it. Like, you're a great dancer, everyone's gonna love you, like, you're gonna do great. Like, I had that constant support, and that definitely helped me. And then, like, each time I went to perform or take an exam, I had less anxiety. Like, I felt better about it. I didn't need to be pushed so much. And I do think that, well, this is my personal opinion, it might be controversial, but I think a little bit of pushing is important when you're younger, because it definitely helped me with self-motivation in junior high and high school with like school stuff. Like, I was always very self-motivated and I was able to push myself. So I think that definitely helped with that. But going from high school to university, I lost that support of family and friends. And in part, it was my choice to start university halfway through the year. Like, a lot of people already had friend groups. There wasn't an opening for any clubs or anything. So I was just kind of tossed in there, and I had a very difficult time making friends. So I didn't have that. And like, although I had the support of my parents, like over the phone, it's just like, wasn't the same. So I had to figure out a lot of stuff on my own, and that was very difficult. And I wish someone had told me to push back a semester, and maybe that would have made a difference, or maybe not, because I think the biggest thing was like putting myself out there in situations where I was uncomfortable. Like in ballet, I feel like I was a pro, like I was ready. Performing didn't scare me like I'd been doing it my whole life, but like making friends, like I don't know. I feel like I wasn't prepared for that. There was just some major differences there.
Do you think anything could have prepared you for that transition, or is it something that every student living away from home for university has to go through?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think anything could have prepared me. Maybe being in more social settings, like I didn't have a ton of time for partying or like going to other kinds of social gatherings in high school because of my extracurricular commitments. But actually, I think it just needs to be more talked about, because I feel like the entrance to university is somewhat romanticized. They're like, you're gonna make a ton of friends, you're gonna party so much, you're gonna have so much fun, you're gonna do all these things. Like, these things don't just come to you though. Like, you have to put yourself out there in order to have those experiences.
Yeah, and it's not easy making friends, especially in a new city, a place where you have to juggle a bunch of commitments, whether it's continuing to do dance at university or wanting to enjoy your social life as well, but also study for academics so that you're able to get into the professions that you want to get into. It's a lot you have to balance. There's a famous rapper out there who recently won the Netflix show, I believe it's Rhythm and Flow, and his name is D-Smoke. A quote from him that I particularly enjoy, and I think reflects a little bit of the discussion we were having before about needing to embrace pain or embrace uncomfortable settings. D-Smoke says, quote, "It's safe to say that growth is an uncomfortable process, that pain is a necessary investment for progress." Do you agree with this quote? And to what extent do you think that pain goes too far, or that pain we don't prepare people well enough for?
Yeah, that is very interesting. I mean, my parents did push me quite hard when I was younger to succeed. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't have had the achievements that I achieved in my adolescence without my mom pushing me. And if you ask me if it was worth it, I would say yes, it was. It did help me stay strong in the future when I got to university and I felt like everything was falling apart. Some of that definitely stuck with me and pushed me to keep going in my life. So I think it was worth it. I do think that pain is just a part of growth.
Surely what's at perhaps the root cause of some of that fear is not knowing what the future will hold, whether that's in the setting of, you know, your dance career in the future, whether that's in the setting of whether or not you'll be able to get the marks you need or make the friends that you're desiring to make in university. You know, you're someone who believes in pushing people and wanting to get the best out of people and encouraging them to be their best selves. One thing that can push up against that in extremes is the issue of mental health. So preserving people's mental health, making sure that they feel comfortable, that they feel valued, and that they're enjoying their lives, to put it very frankly. My first question on this issue, more of the mental health components of transitioning from certainty to uncertainty, it's just, first of all, what is mental health in your opinion?
I think mental health is so important. And I have learned that somewhat the hard way these past few years. Yeah, I must say definitely growth and pushing yourself to be the best that you could be is definitely a double-edged sword. And starting in high school, I remember it was during my Nutcracker season. Nutcracker is the December ballet production that we put on every year, and I'd been doing it for 12 years by this point, and there were like 4 weeks of productions for basically the whole weekend, like four shows. Like, it took up all my time during the weekend, and I forgot that I had a test one day, I believe this was grade 11. And I remember I just, like, I walked into the exam room. I had forgotten that there was a test. And then I just freaked out. I stumbled out of the room. Like, my heart was beating so fast. I was dizzy. Like, I felt tunnel vision. I went to the bathroom. I fell over. And I felt like I was having a seizure, but I wasn't. And, like, I remember the teacher found me on the floor and then, like, called 911. And it turns out I was having a panic attack. And I didn't find that out till, like, quite a bit after when I was doing some research. Like, they had told me it was anxiety. And I was like, I don't have anxiety. But also I was, like, clearly burnt out from everything. And then I remember after they sent me to the principal's office, and they were basically like, this doesn't look good on your record, like, we're gonna have to tell universities if you keep doing this, so, like, you have to stop. They didn't tell me, they didn't even, like, really make sure if I was okay, honestly. And I mean, I went to a private school that I feel like was so focused on, like, academics. And that was my introduction to mental health, which was terrible introduction. And I think that institutional changes have to be made. Changes are being made to, like, at the university level, but I think it should also be instituted at junior high, high school, like, even elementary school. Honestly, there should be more education there.
What do you think would be valuable for students to know about mental health?
I think, like, basics on different mental illnesses and disorders, whether it be common ones like anxiety, depression, bipolar, borderline personality. I think an introductory course on all of them, making kids aware that these exist and it's okay, you're like, you can still live with it, to help eliminate the stigma around mental health, because I think that's also ridiculous that, like, people feel like they can't talk about these things. But also, like, how to take care of your mental health, like, skills you can learn, mindfulness, meditation, a basic course, I think, would definitely help. And I wish I had that, so.
A large part of the problem is also that people feel like when these things happen to them, there's something wrong with them. They feel like there's something different about them. And given the fact that a lot of it is so stigmatized, you feel sometimes uncomfortable about reaching out to other people or asking questions about how you're feeling or asking if you're different or something wrong with you. But no, it's not the case at all. It's something that everyone goes through, because everyone experiences it perhaps in different ways. But I completely agree that some sort of reform needs to be made to ensure people get the support that they require when going through these difficult moments. Now, Montana, you are someone who has taught me a lot about mental health. You've become quite knowledgeable about it at this point. You've gone through your own struggles, as has everyone. And my question for you is, how did you get to know so much about mental health? Where did your knowledge base come from? And who did you reach out to get the kind of support that you felt was going to help you through those tough times?
Yeah, that's a great question. It all started that first semester in university. I mean, I'd been having panic attacks with increasing frequency, like, throughout my last few years in high school, but, like, no one really recognized it as an issue. Like, my teachers were just like, are you okay? And then I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm fine now, right? So I kind of just brushed it off. And then going to university and being away from my previous support system, I became quite severely depressed, and I was like, I didn't want to live anymore, basically. Like, I wouldn't go outside for days, like, weeks, and I wouldn't really talk to anybody, and I just didn't want to be alive anymore. And then that's when I realized, like, I need help. Like, I don't want to feel this way. I don't know if I can go on. So I ended up calling my friend from high school that I initially came to McGill with, and she picked up. She came over immediately. She stayed the night. She's such a kind girl. Like, I love her so much, and I'm so thankful for her. And she helped me reach out to my mom, which was honestly so hard. And anyone who's had to do this knows how difficult it is to admit that you're struggling to a parent. Definitely super difficult, but also such a relief that I would hopefully not be suffering alone anymore. I feel like our parents' generation, like, mental health just wasn't a thing. Depression was just like being sad, like, oh, just feel better, you'll be fine. Like, anxiety was like, oh, you worry too much, right? But now we're like actually recognizing these are bigger issues, deeper issues. So she ended up being great. Like, she is my biggest support now. She helped put me in therapy, and it took a lot of therapists. Like, not all of them are a great fit. It's okay to try out different ones. Like, I think I went through like 5, and it's honestly quite discouraging, but I promise it is worth it once you find one that works for you. And then I was in therapy for 2 years, and she phrased everything like almost in a way that was like made for me. Like, I understood everything she said, and it's difficult, but I promise that it makes a difference. Therapy is great. I know it's difficult, but please ask for help. Like, you are not a burden to anyone. Like, there are people who love you, and things will get better.
Never be afraid to reach out for help. Trying to tie this back into the broader discussion of transitions, it seems as though we've hit the front of having two different opposing forces. One is a force that says we should embrace pain, we should look for challenge, we should take ourselves from the comfortable to the uncomfortable. The other force is one that says if we do that in an extreme, there might be cost to you in terms of anxiety, depression, and mental health concerns that make you feel as though the struggle isn't worth it. How do you reconcile these two opposing forces? Are they opposing at all? And what advice would you give to our listeners on how they can find that balance between the two forces?
It is difficult. I feel like I was too far in the push yourself pain. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to try to sit home and chill. But then I also felt like I lost my purpose. It's a constant battle. And I think it's good and important to have goals to push yourself to achieve, but also the goals are not worth causing mass anxiety. And I think it's very important to be kind to yourself, like, recognize how far you've come, how much work you put into it. And so cheesy, but it's all about the journey. Like, every experience you have, every person you meet, there's definitely a lesson to take away. So even if you push yourself for the goal and then maybe you don't quite get there, at least you tried. I'm sure you learned a lot, and that is almost more meaningful than achieving it in itself, although that does feel great. In my personal experience, the mindset of like having a certain goal, such as like, if I get this job, I'll finally be happy. If I get into this school, like, yes, I'll finally be happy. Like, I thought that once I got into McGill, oh, I'd finally be happy. And then I was not. Like, no one thing is going to magically make you happy, nor one person. And by taking each experience, each person you meet, each downfall with a mindset of gratitude, then at least you can find some meaning in that.
Now, we promised the folks at the beginning of today's episode that we would explain to them how you go from evading change to embracing change. One of the things I picked up on your last answer was that gratitude can play an important part. Gratitude. And the importance of being gracious in being able to take on that challenge, to overcome those barriers, and to finally feel like those transitions are worth it. In closing, how can gratitude play a part in helping manage those transition periods in your life?
If you think about it, why are transitions so scary? You're either worrying about the uncertainty of the future or you're grieving the past. Looking at the past, like, yes, you had so many great times in the past, so many great memories with these people, doing these things. And although it's so sad to be leaving that behind, be thankful that you had those memories, like you had those people. And then with the future, like anything could happen. Like you have a world of possibilities, and that's pretty astounding. Like really, the world is your oyster, man. So yeah, I think that approaching transitions with gratitude is super important, and resisting change only leads to suffering. So embracing change, although easier said than done, definitely the way to move forward, happily, hopefully.
Life is one big transition. It's moving from uncertainty to uncertainty to uncertainty. What is one final piece of advice you would give to our listeners?
Take each day at a time. I've realized that there's really no point in ruminating about past mistakes, like things that happened days, years ago, or like worrying about the far future. If you're just trying your best and doing the best you can, that's all you can really do. And always be kind to yourself. Like we always talk about being kind to others. And I mean, of course, that's important, but also be kind to yourself. Everything will be okay. I promise.
Thank you very much for your time, Montana.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.